Hello, welcome to 25 Cents, a video game podcast. I'm Chris.
And I'm Nick. Each episode, we'll be talking about the games we've tried, other games we keep going back to, and what we think might be great games to check out if you've got kids.
And you can find us wherever you listen to podcasts or on the web at goodstuff.network. Hey, Nick, how are you doing?
Pretty good. It's been a busy couple weeks since midwinter break, but kind of back to my routine, back to a few games. I think one of the things I've been thinking about a lot, kind of in our brief sort of parenting kids corner, is how much do you sort of self-adjust your skill level when playing with your kids? Now, I know you have kids of varying age ranges. My son is 7. So depending on the game, you know, he can definitely beat me at a couple of things, but how much do you kind of tune things down a little bit to make it more fun, more fairly matched if you're playing multiplayer together?
I think it's like, for me, because with 3 kids varying ages, like you said, it really depends on their temperament more than their skill. Like one of my kids really enjoys the game, the challenge, the fun, doesn't care win or lose. Another one loses her, I guess I'm identifying because I have 1 girl, 2 boys, but loses her mind if she's losing. So it's a little, if I'm wanting to keep the game going, it's probably more fun to tune it down. Although she doesn't play a lot, like it's more Animal Crossing and things like that we're playing together and learning about and stuff. So it's less competitive games.
Right. You're building together.
Yeah. Minecraft, maybe that kind of thing. My oldest is much more like, if we're playing a game of hockey, he wants to just play and have fun and doesn't care win or lose. It's just getting to play and stuff. So it's an interesting question. I remember sort of coming up against that initially, like playing hockey with ice hockey on Xbox with a 7-year-old is a very different experience than a 13-year-old, obviously. And you do have to, if you want to make them enjoy it at all or let them enjoy it at all, you kind of do have to accidentally drop the puck or pass it the wrong way or make a buffoon of yourself a bit so that they kind of feel like it's on an somewhat even field. Cause they know realistically my dad should whoop me pretty good here, but
yeah, I think for me, usually what I end up doing is just slowing down my decision making, and especially at least at 7, the complete grasp of like the controls and moving in virtual space are still sometimes easy to get stuck, or like his hand will slip off the button on a touch control or something, and then he's completely doing something he doesn't want to be doing in the game, and so just kind of waiting for a moment for recovery, I found works pretty well there.
It is like whatever the hockey stick growth of like ability or something at that point. Like I remember from 7, 8-ish to 9, 10 is like dramatically different in terms of the games you can play, the awareness, the capabilities, and like everything else, right? Like reading takes off at that age. Like it's a huge change. And so I saw a tweet go by last week, I think it was, of a parent kind of like bemoaning, almost not like complaining, but just like, man, I was hoping to play video games with my kid and it was going to be fun and I'm going to get to do all these fun things with my kid, but they just don't get it. And like, yeah, but you just wait 6 months, a year, whatever, and it changes so dramatically, just like everything else with kids.
Yeah, I'm remembering back to a multiplayer Tetris clone that my dad and I used to play. So we used to have the original Tetris where we were just competing on high score, but at some point we got some like Mac shareware. We had this shareware like multiplayer version of Tetris, and I definitely remember there was a point where, I think it was called Texris, but there was a point where all of a sudden, like, I could just consistently destroy my dad. something clicked, you know, for my response time or visual acuity or something, or you know, he started getting just a little bit slower age wise, or I don't know what, but that wasn't a game we went to anymore because it wasn't like competitive between the two of us. So I imagine I am on the cusp for some of those things coming soon. But we've been trying some multiplayer games. We can get into that in Apple Corner in a bit. I don't think there's really much news in the world. We watched the Perseverance landing and some of the videos and photos coming in from Mars, which is a fun non-gaming thing. Space is a big interest of my son's. I haven't heard, I think there was some Pokemon 25th anniversary events, but nothing that really jumped out at me. Still looking forward to maybe new Snap when it comes out for Switch. I did see that Epic, the creators of Fortnite, bought Tonic, the creators of Fall Guys, which is kind of interesting because I feel like those are kind of two of the big like streamed games of the last year, other than Among Us maybe, that get talked about a lot in the news. So it'll be interesting to see how that affects things long term.
Well, between Fortnite and Rocket League and Fall Guys, they're not short of cash, obviously, but they have just such a huge range of games and appeal to different people. My oldest has decided now that he doesn't play Fortnite anymore. And I was like, well, a month ago you spent $15 on a whatever battle pass so you could get the Mandalorian skin. What happens to that now? He's like, well, okay. And I'm sure it's just a phase. Like his friends are probably more into Rocket League. And so he's whatever and that kind of thing. But yeah, the value of a digital costume has plummeted for now anyways, at least in our house. But Fall Guys was one of the ones where I was tempted to actually, it looked like a lot of fun watching streams. I still have never played it. And it looks like one of those super simple, almost stupid games that would be a ton of fun to play, especially if you had a good group of people to play it with, whether online or in person. And was tempted. That was one of my trigger points for like almost pulling the trigger on getting a PC. Because as far as I am aware, it's still just Windows only. And so I was very tempted just because it looked like watching some streams and stuff of that. It looked like a lot of fun to play.
Yeah, I have not, not having a gaming PC, although certainly, something I've mentioned a few times, I'd think about maybe, when I suddenly have more free time, which is certainly not the case during pandemic work from home, homeschool times, but maybe someday it'd be fun. But yeah, I think that's the kind of multiplayer experience that I think we're definitely interested in. Kind of getting into Apple Corner and multiplayer, I think we discovered an interesting limitation. My son and I were trying to play Crossy Castle, the multiplayer mode, which I had played it single player a bunch shortly after Arcade launched, but had not tried the multiplayer. And we discovered that because his Game Center account is, it's a restricted under 13 Apple ID, you can't do like find games on local Wi-Fi. You have to just do like the invite code method, which is a little bit more roundabout, and you have to type things in and stuff. And it's really surprising because he's in our iCloud family, right? Like,
and physically in your house,
and like literally right next to me. So like, I can understand, that somewhere in Apple legal, they were like, oh, we can't, potentially let kids just like join games with anybody. But it seems like they could do a quick cross check to see, is this local Wi-Fi game being advertised by someone whose Apple ID is in your family? And I think, it goes to the general trend around how sort of Apple services are like a little bit, not quite all the way there in terms of managing things. I don't know if you've run into that on any of your platforms that you play multiplayer family games on.
There's a common like refrain I find anyways amongst sticking with Apple for a moment of, it feels like the Apple developers themselves don't actually have a family. They're just told to implement family mode across like photos. And it's it's a very complicated programming problem. I'm sure I'm not trying to disparage the complexity of it, but it's still from a user perspective, it's just like, just let me share all my photos and then that's it. We'll have a shared album and just put them all there or whatever. Like the way Google Photos does it actually works really well. You tag a person, you say every photo with any photo with that person or these five people in it, put it in a shared album and we'll work together, we can have that shared album. And so similarly with like family contacts or whatever, it feels very hard to share with people in your family, Apple ID family or whatever. And so, but yeah, definitely on, I think it was Xbox Live. I was trying to do it all properly, like setting up my kids with theirs so we can do screen time tracking and making sure they don't play games that are above their pay grade and age. And but then that bit us because it wasn't Fortnite, it was Star Wars Battlefront, where my son, my oldest, had bought the game and then he actually couldn't play it because his Apple ID or his Xbox Live ID had him tagged under 13 appropriately, and the game is locked to multiplayer only, I think, or it mimics multiplayer only locally, even if you don't play with it online. At any rate, he couldn't play the game basically until he happened to be turning 13. That's why he bought the game. And so it worked out okay. But I was looking online and lots of people are realizing suddenly that, oh shoot, because I actually was following the rules, I can't actually play this game, even though me as the parent, I'm completely fine with my kid playing this game. And whatever, within the Xbox itself, you can lock down, you're not allowed to communicate with people remotely online. Let's say like do voice chat. You could say that and limit it only to friends only or whatever. So it has pretty robust controls, but then I'm guessing it was the game. I forget who the publisher was of that one, but the publisher probably had some sort of legal rules, just like Apple does, with certain age restrictions. And so it's just like a non-starter. There's just no way around it. And even if you adjust, it was something like, even if you adjust their age after the fact, it doesn't.
Yeah.
You can't trick it.
Yeah. I think I know, in the US, a lot of it is governed by the COPPA, Child Online Protection Act, I think it is. And I imagine there's similar legal regimes across the world where the providers and developers have pretty harsh legal penalties if they don't make it very, very hard to have kids under a certain age, and at least in the US it's 13, have full access to an account, which of course tends to just drive people to lying about their age when they create the account, or having like shadow accounts that the family doesn't know about or something. But it would be nice if there was a little bit more like, no, I'm the parent. I grant this access to this thing. And it's probably a classic example where the legal regime really falls behind what would be possible technically, or it would take too long to set up. And in the meantime, you know, no kids are able to play. But on a more fun note, the multiplayer Crossy Castle is actually really great. So we were playing local multiplayer, both of us with touch controls, him on the family iPad, me on my phone. And, you know, the nicest feature, and this is true of a lot of multiplayer platformers that I've seen, is basically you can't die unless both of you die, right? So like you basically get a second chance. And there were a couple of times where like I messed up a jump, but my son cleared the level, and so we didn't, you know, lose a heart, right? So that's kind of a nice way to play. And it's a great way for him to play, because by himself, he would make enough mistakes that he wouldn't get very far, but there's enough of the levels where, you know, he falls down and then I can finish clearing it. And we don't have to worry about, you know, that sort of source of frustration of getting stuck at his current skill level, which is really nice.
I tried playing Crossy Castle. That reminds me of up at the family cabin where there's a 4K Apple TV, I think. But all we had was the Apple remote to play with, and I could not for the life of me figure out how to actually work it, like slide the, because there's no indication on the screen of as to what the controls are. And I just had the Apple remote, and I'm sure I think you can sync your Apple, like your iPhone, maybe as a controller somehow. I'm not sure. I didn't have enough time or bandwidth to really bother with it too much, but it was a exercise in frustration for sure. But visually, the common refrain on our show, obviously, like it looked amazing on the big screen TV, like on a 40 inch or whatever it was, right. TV, colors and popping, and it's just like really good. And maybe, yeah, like again, almost want to order an Apple TV, a new one. And, but I've held off because I'm sure any day now,
any day now. Yeah. speaking of Apple TVs, my dad reported this past week that they are finally putting out their Apple TV Rev 2 to pasture. So this would be the roughly 10-year-old model.
Like the original.
Yeah. So Rev 2. So Rev 2, but it was like a little. There was a Rev 3, which was the last one pre TVOS. But it came with some basic built-in apps, but basically, any of the new streaming platforms aren't launching apps for it. And in fact, some of the existing streaming platforms have end of life their apps, right? Because they don't want to, they don't want this weird old limited experience with whatever Apple supported on that platform. You can't get like the really dynamic Netflix. It pretty much mimics the old Front Row interface that was available on like IMAX circa 2005. And so you get like menus and you can select videos from it. You could load your iTunes content and photos on it, but pretty limited platform. But yeah, it was being flaky. It only does AirPlay 1. And they were ready to say goodbye. Unfortunately, there's not a great replacement for them. Now, they're not heavy streamers, so I think right now they're actually just like plugging my dad's laptop in over HDMI when they want to watch like Disney Plus or something like that, but otherwise, I mean, they're mostly on cable still. I think,
does it still function, like, because does it work at all? Because it still is a handy I've just found out like using Airport Express of a similar vintage as a way to get audio into my stereo into our like house speakers or whatever that our house came with. And so I didn't have to buy anything, luckily, but yeah, an old Apple TV works actually very similarly as long as you can hook up a screen to it temporarily. But
yeah, I think my dad's audio solution remains an old iSub set that I think he got.
Classic.
Because he was a computer teacher at a school before he retired. And so sometimes there was like a little bit extra left in the tech budget. So at the end of the year, like the tech coordinator would basically hand out like random Apple hardware, discounted Apple hardware to the staff. So he got that at some point. So it's still a USB-A connector, which I don't think his laptop has anymore. So he has to live the dongle lifestyle. But that's his preferred way of doing music, you know, not throwing it over the air, but just plugging in and playing that way. And that's because he has a very, very carefully curated iTunes music library and playback system about kind of going through his library in a rotation. That's why he likes it that way. But yeah, it does feel like, you know, there's still just, we're all, we keep waiting for that Apple TV hardware that doesn't exist. And I know we complain about it a lot, but like Jason Snell had a couple articles on Six Colors and he discussed it on his Upgrade podcast about just where maybe that hardware will never come and where, you know, that Apple's just decided it's not a business that's worth being in. Which would be unfortunate.
No, I was gonna say, I wonder, like, it'd be so fascinating to know the numbers on, like, because obviously with the Apple TV app being installed on Sony, on Xbox, on all these other devices where you can watch a show, you can't play Apple Arcade, but you can watch shows that you've bought or rented or that Apple TV Plus is a part of, on multiple devices. And so that's some number of people, whether it's 50,000 or 2 million people that can watch the content and consume the content that way, just can't do Apple Arcade and some of the other home, HomeKit, yeah, stuff with. And so whatever budget line that is compared to however many Apple TV hardware boxes they sell and then programmers to support it, et cetera, and how that balances out now and whatever bet they made on that a year or two ago when they started development potentially on the Apple TV 5K or whatever they're going to call it. And maybe it's just, yeah, getting relegated further and further down the priority queue as they're like, well, we're making all this money because people are watching Ted Lasso on Sony TVs now. We don't really care if Apple Arcade, it never makes it beyond to the TV officially, like in a newer box, and we'll just keep selling this one until it's done and then move on. It feels very like counterintuitive to the push they're making with Apple Arcade, but if Apple Arcade itself isn't really warranting enough attention or getting enough attention, and then the TV hardware itself doesn't get enough attention, then the two of those things could combine to kind of doom it to the recycling bin, I guess, like your dad's.
Yeah, I think he dropped it at the Apple store in the end, because they'll take back any of their old hardware for free recycling.
So
yeah, I think the other thing we wanted to talk about kind of when we split this episode plan in two was sort of the tabletop games that we've been playing. So I know you've posted a few pictures of some family game nights online. What have you all been playing?
Well, now I'm having deja vu. I feel like I've talked about Starship Catan like four times, but maybe that's just because we recorded that first episode twice or by accident or whatever. I can't.
I think we may have talked about it in the Lost episode 25.
Okay. the one that'll someday see the light of day and will be worth like $50,000 on Bitcoin or whatever. Starship Catan has been a hit with my oldest for sure. It's a two-player game. Nothing really like, I mean, vaguely like Starship or Settlers of Catan in terms of resource building and stuff, but nothing really like it. Doesn't really translate that well. And so I've been holding off introducing it to them because I've owned it for before our kids were born. And my wife and I tried it a few times, never really took to it too much. And then I tried it once with him and he latched onto it right away. And he's the kind of kid who loves to, if he likes the game, he just wants to play it every night for that whole week. And so for a week straight, basically we were playing Starship Catan every night. And it's not a short, like it's a good, especially when you're new to it, it's a 2 to 3 hour game. And then we've got it down to an hour-ish, depending if you, like if we lower the victory staples or whatever for the victory settings, I wanted to say for a board game. But how many victory points you need, and it operates on that same mechanic as Settlers. And so, it definitely incorporates enough sort of spacey themes that make it a little fun. I could see like your son at whatever, I don't know what age appropriate it would be, but could definitely get into and just sort of building, adding boosters and fighting off space pirates and trying to get to enough victory points by upgrading your ship to be the winner in the game, obviously. And there's enough of a variety each time you play that it's not the same kind of game, just like with Settlers in that way. I feel like there's probably a limitation in terms of how much you really, I mean, maybe I'm just coming off of playing it for a week straight, so I'm more, maybe a little burnt out on it, but yeah, it's worth picking up. I forget how much it would be, probably $30 to $50, somewhere in there. It's a well-made game. The pieces are really solid, sturdy game, like Settlers, and has stood up definitely over our play time anyways. So how about you? What's been happening in Tabletop Corner for you?
Yeah, I in the Catanaverse, Star Trek Catan is the one that we have. So I think at one point in the past, I did have, I think I was confusing it with Starship, but I had Starfarers of Catan, which had these like little model rockets that you use to track your tech level, as well as the original Settlers of Catan, Seafarers of Catan, and I think maybe Cities of Knights of Catan. But I kind of did a board game purge before one of our many moves years ago. But it then eventually got Star Trek Catan, and that one works for us. It's basically the base game of Settlers of Catan, but with Star Trek theming, and then it adds these bridge crew cards that give you little temporary bonus powers on your turn, and that really helps smooth out some of the randomness of the dice roll. I think I mentioned that mm-hmm. before, so that's definitely a favorite. So we played that over the break. Played some Dominion, some Dose, from which is a variant from the makers of Uno, and then I had kickstarted last year a game called Fossilis. So we played that twice. It's definitely a more involved setup. But you're basically, there's kind of a tray and you're digging for bones and combining those bones to complete different dinosaur fossils for points. One of the interesting things about that one is, you know, the first time we played, it seemed like there was kind of this one, you know, almost broken strategy. So I went on BoardGameGeek, the forums, and basically found some discussion where the game designer weighed in and was like, yeah, you know, we decided that was the best strategy that the game should go for, which is, you know, making as many incomplete fossils as possible, as opposed to trying to finish really big fossils. And we were a little surprised by that, but then, there was some sort of house rule discussion. So we like changed some of the supply and victory point rules a little bit based on some of that discussion online. And the second game, I think, went a little better. I think my son and I were like 4 points apart or something like that. But in all that, he also had asked me, you know, like, oh, what are your favorite like board, card, and video games? And yeah, you know, what came to mind was like Star Trek Catan and Dominion. Dominion I especially like because there's so many different combinations and expansions you can play. But for video game, I had to go back into Computer Game Past and definitely going to say Sid Meier's Alpha Centauri. So, you know, basically more or less Civilization 2, but, you know, completely redone with a sort of space colonization theme, some really cool sci-fi content. And I remember playing a lot of that game in the sort of CD-ROM sim area when I had a lot of free time.
Yeah, for me, it was definitely Settlers of Catan is a game that has occupied a lot of time. Rook is actually just a card game that we played a lot as kids. And it's kind of like in the early 90s, late 80s, kind of like if you're a church kid and there's this vague idea that cards are of the devil, then Rook, because it didn't actually have real like kings and queens on it, it was its own little set of cards, was somehow okay and passed whatever biblical tests.
Yeah, because it wouldn't lead you into gambling or something.
Exactly. Yeah, I think that's basically it. It you couldn't play strip poker maybe with it or something. I don't know. Sorry, nearly made you spit your coffee. So that's board games and then card games and then video game. Like, and actually, Rook is actually a really good game that kids can play too. It's pretty easy to grapple with. Learn. It's easy to learn. Hey, I think is what I should say. And then video games wise, like definitely, like I've said before, a hockey series is always kind of a good go to for me. Easy to play with a variety, especially up here in Canada where lots of people get hockey. But then also classics like Populous. I was remembering Civilization, like you referenced. SimCity and Warcraft 2 are others that are like classics that I definitely spent many, many hours playing.
One of the ones we have is called Mega City Oceania. I might have mentioned it on a previous episode, but one of the components is you have to build little towers out of the pieces. And you know, you get points for tallest tower, most variety of materials, and so on. But you're basically supposed to be fiddling with the pieces, building your tower when it's not your turn. Like it's part of the game.
Nice.
Yeah. Any other games you're kind of coming back to?
No, like we're, I mean, like I've said before, kids are kind of in and out with Rocket League or Fortnite, depending on. Among Us is still kind of popular, but I think the kids' friends have kind of fallen away, and that one definitely requires friends to play. I mean, you can do it anonymously online, but for our kids anyways, it was a lot more fun to play with friends, and they've kind of fallen away from that, as far as playing. And I dove into Breath of the Wild again. I'm 40% maybe, it feels like, through. And I think I was realizing the sad realization as an adult, and maybe you can identify with this or others out there identify with this, is like part of what I think the struggle with something like a Breath of the Wild is like the open world aspect is great. But at the end of the day, sometimes I don't want to have to make decisions I've made decisions all day in my job for my kids.
Too much adulting.
Yeah, so much adulting. And then sometimes like a game like SimCity, where you are making a lot of decisions, but it's also almost more like procedural, like yes, no decisions. Whereas like the wide open world of Breath of the Wild, which is very relaxing to play and enjoyable, but then it's just like there's almost too much decision tree making going on, where if I do this, then that, and then all of a sudden my mortgage isn't paid, and what do I do then? And like, so that's where I'm like forcing myself, like, no, I know you like it. I know I like it. Dive into Breath of the Wild, play it, get through this puzzle or whatever part you're at. I was like, and it's a lot of fun. Like I was just at a part where I'm like surfing on my shield behind some sort of sandworm creature and getting through the desert, because the desert's too hot if you walk. And so you have to surf behind the sandworm creature. Yeah. And so there's lots of fun little mechanics, little mini games almost inside of the big game that you're walking through. But yeah, then when it's like decision tree time, like, do I take this quest or this quest? I'm like, can I just get it like I think I should stream it where I could have like a Breath of the Wild advisor, like almost like a financial advisor for my life, but like a Breath of the Wild coach who's just like, hey, no, do this one. This one, I know this path. You'll enjoy this one more. You can always come back to the other one.
It sounds like a business opportunity for, you know, like the teens, right? You know, you don't have a paper route. You do game consulting
for the old people. Well, there's one person on Twitter. I forget her name right off the top of my head, but I know every time I post a Breath of the Wild screenshot or whatever, she's like right in there with it. And I'm sure if I stream live and like would link to it or whatever, they'd be happy to jump in and be like, yeah, hold my hand through some of the harder parts or whatever. How about you? What are you coming back to?
Yeah. Well, you know, Hearthstone's kind of always there as the background. You know, what you said about games being job-like, you know, it certainly reminds me when I was really into World of Warcraft way back now almost 10 years ago. I mean, I was at the level where like I was downloading custom spreadsheets to help me optimize my rating build, you know, with where you like enter in all the numbers and like, oh, if I switch to this weapon, it's like 0.2 better than that weapon. So that was definitely getting into job territory back in the day. My son was trying Enchanted World, which is that slider one we reviewed a while back. And I also recommended that one to my sister because she's on an Apple Arcade trial right now. I forget how they got it for free, but she's been trying a few games and was looking for ones that would be good for her and my my niece, who just turned 8, to play together. Also in the multiplayer area, my son and I have been playing a little bit of Super Mega Mini Party. So not really the online one where there's like a lobby and you can randomly join games, but just doing the game code, the room code. And then, you know, you pick all the games have kind of like a classic arcade feel. You know, they're loosely based on some of the old cabinet games from the late 70s, early 80s. And they're all pretty fun. You know, again, like kind of retro, almost synthwave style graphics. So that's another fun one. And really, you know, each round is only like a minute or two. So it's a great way to just squeeze in a bunch of quick little games together.
Mm-hmm. Cool. Well, that's probably enough for this episode. And we will we'll be back again in a couple weeks with another episode. If you want to reach us online, we are on Twitter at 25C Arcade. Thanks for listening to 25 Cents, our video game podcast. You can find me on Twitter at iChris.
And you can find me on Twitter and most everywhere else as Ultra Nerd. That's N-U-R-D.
And you can find 25 Cents wherever you listen to podcasts. Be sure to check out the Good Stuff Patreon if you're curious. Patreon.com/goodstuff. And of course, like I've said before, all the other podcasts that are available through Good Stuff at goodstuff.network. Thanks for listening. Have a great day. Bye.
Bye.